I'll be excited when both of them are across each other in the ring and the first bell rings. Do you know what I mean? Because with boxing, anything can happen. We mentioned with Davis, he has all these issues outside of the ring. With Ryan, he has had some issues as well. So we don't know. And, you know, there were different platforms. There were different promoters. There is some sort of agreement in principle, but, you know, they still have to get something done and sign something ahead of this fight on April 15th. So I won't be too excited until they're in the ring. However, it's an excellent matchup. It's great for boxing.
Welcome back to the RBR Recap. It is 2023. Happy New Year. I'm Alex Burgos, joined as always by my man, Gabe Rivas. We're back in action. Gabe, how are you, sir?
I'm doing well. Happy to be back. I think this will be the second year that we do the RBR Recap. I think we started last February or March, so I'm looking forward to keep this show going and looking forward to what comes.
Yes, sir. I'm super excited. We can kick it off with what was a entertaining card. A lot of big names last night at the Capital One Arena, headlined by Gervonta Tank Davis taking on Hector Luis Garcia. We'll jump into that main event, and then we'll also talk a little bit about the co-main and a fighter in Jaron Butsenis who's, you know, poised and looking to be the next superstar in boxing. And obviously in one of the glamour divisions right now, 147 pounds, welterweight, a lot of big names in and around that division. So we'll talk a little bit about what he did versus his opponent, but let's jump right into the main event in what Gervonta Tank Davis did against Hector Luis Garcia. Obviously a huge crowd. We've seen now fight over fight over fight. And it was mentioned last night, again, you know, a sold out arena in another city. He's done it in Atlanta. He's done it in Baltimore. He's done it at Barclays in Brooklyn. You know, so many places now in DC, 19,731 people, sold out venue, pro partisan Tank crowd, and fighting a guy in Hector Luis Garcia who had a big 2022 Fighter of the Year candidate, his trainer, Bob Santos, Sports Illustrated's Trainer of the Year, on a lot of other people's lists as a candidate, you know, between him and Derek James. So, you know, accolades galore for his opponent, had a solid 2022, like I mentioned, coming in, trying to play, you know, spoiler again in what was a kind of de facto hometown fight for Tank, who's from nearby Baltimore. So we wanted to see one of the things in which, you know, Tank was dealing with a lot of out of the ring issues. Would that pressure, would that distraction kind of get to him in the ring? And, you know, from what he did last night, I think he's shown now time and time again, even when it looks like the deck is stacked against him on a personal level or on distractions on the outside, he's able to come in, or like with the Rolly fight where he's getting, you know, disrespected and there's a lot of back and forth, he's able to come into the fight, zone in and fight the fight that he wants to fight. So I was impressed with that, how he handled everything and really came out on top. And so he got the stoppage over Garcia after the eighth round. Going into the ninth, Garcia said he couldn't see, and trainer Bob Santos and the crew in his corner stopped the fight. So, Gabe, I want to start off with you, see what you thought of the fight in general. Also, in particular, how you thought Tank Davis performed. And then, obviously, we'll transition and talk a little bit about what's next, which is the one that everyone's been talking about for quite some time now. Shout out to our guy, Sebastian Milo, who we've had on a few times. I mean, I feel like we talked about that with him. Obviously, Ryan Garcia, Tank Davis. So that's the big one that we're going to touch on, too. But let's start with this fight. What did you think of it?
Well, we finally got Tank versus Garcia, but it wasn't the Tank Garcia that we all wanted. It was against Hector Luis Garcia. He had fought at 126, at 130 pounds as well. He fought the likes of Chris Colbert and Roger Gutierrez and beat both guys. So he really earned this opportunity against Gervonta Davis. However, this wasn't the Davis versus Garcia that we wanted to see. And because of that, it was seen as kind of a tune-up fight for Gervonta Davis to have in or around his hometown. And that's kind of what it was. However, Hector Luis Garcia did come to fight. The conventional wisdom was that if you're fighting someone like Gervonta, who's shorter but stronger and hits really hard, you should box on the outside. Hector Luis Garcia did that, but he did it with authority. Now, what does that mean? You take the center of the ring, or try to take the center of the ring, and you jab. And when your opponent tries to come forward, you don't just see territory and go to the ropes. No, you take a quick step back and keep hammering him with hard jabs. And that's what Hector Luis Garcia was doing. He was keeping Davis honest in the early rounds by taking that quick step back, throwing that right jab. And then occasionally, as I think we got into the third and the fourth round, landing the straight left as well. And we saw that Gervonta was getting caught with a few of those. But he had the heart, he had the boxing skills, and he had the chin because he was able to take a lot of punishment. However, you can only take so many shots from Gervonta Davis until you start to crumble. And so we saw that at in that eighth round, Gervonta landed a hard straight left hand. And it was one of those left hands where he doesn't set it up with the jab. It's just a power shot thrown with everything. And then he landed a right hook to the body. And then he followed up with another power shot to the head. And that's what wobbled Garcia, sent him backwards. Davis wanted to go for the finish. He couldn't there in that round. But as you mentioned, the corner stopped it before the ninth round could begin. So like you said, there's so many things happening in Gervonta Davis's life outside of the ring. It's up for him and the authorities and everyone else to figure that out. But when it comes into the ring, when it comes to his performance in the ring, I mean, he looks just as good as ever before. He did what he was supposed to do and dominate a guy who, let's be honest, was moving up a division. However, he came to fight, solid chin, very solid boxing skills, a former world champion. And so I think it was a good performance ahead of the Ryan Garcia fight. And that's supposed to be slated for April 15.
Yeah, definitely. I will say, I'll preface the legal stuff. I'm not here to be judge and jury. You know, it's just things that he's going through, and, you know, there's processes in place for him to, you know, have to atone for whatever things he's done or defend himself for things he hasn't done, according to him. So, you know, that'll get sorted out. But my thing is, like, the way that he handles that pressure, the way that he can come in, it's already enough to have, you know, so many people coming out to support you. You're a champion, you're undefeated. Those things are pressure enough for most people that walk a regular life, you know, every day of the week. So to have that on top of these other things that you have to deal with, and then, oh, by the way, a super fight looming with Ryan Garcia. It's a lot of pressure, but I thought he handled it very well. And even Coach Calvin Ford, his trainer, mentioned, you know, it was a rocky camp. And I don't think it was a rocky camp because Tank wasn't making weight or wasn't training hard. No, it was a rocky camp because of these other things and the way that they were, you know, already basically judging Gervonta Davis and what had happened. So, you know, for that part, I give him a lot of credit, and he's able to really have a high level of focus and come in, and it's great to see what he could do. I, you know, now seeing his style over these last four, five, six fights, you know, he's willing to give up rounds early. And when he gives up rounds, you know, he's able to kind of download that data. And then once he does that, and he did this against Hector Garcia in the fourth round, that's when he really starts to measure his distance, get comfortable on the inside, and land those power shots. I think the first three rounds were pretty competitive, and they were both trying to figure each other out. But I think once Tank let his hands go, we saw that hand speed that was too much for Garcia to deal with. Then the power shots obviously started landing. And as those multiplied, then it's like, okay, this is, you know, what I said previous, you know, before the fight started, is like 6, 7, 8, I'm thinking, is around the time he's going to start breaking him down. And, you know, we saw that little by little. Now I looked up at the big screen yesterday. I think Farhood after 6 had it, like, you know, but 1 point ahead for Garcia. I didn't see that fight, you know, and obviously looking at it now with the judges, they didn't see that fight either. But if you're giving Garcia credit for, you know, maintaining his position, being able to box, hold the center of the ring, maybe things like that he was getting credit for. But I thought Tank was in control more so than what maybe some people were giving him credit for. I just think that he was being patient, cautious, because it's really something when you look at the size differential between Tank and half of these guys. You know, he has to do a lot of kind of picking and prodding to make sure he's got that proper distance, you know, solidified, maintained. And then he's able to know, okay, if I do throw that, you know, lead right, that jab out there, I'm not going to get countered, or I'm able to be within that distance where I'm going to land my power shot. Because like you said, sometimes he's not setting it up with the jab. He's just coming over top with the left. I almost sometimes see like similarities between him and Canelo. And I know he likes Canelo, vice versa, Canelo likes him, but sometimes I see these shots that he's just kind of leading in and is able to be dynamic enough to land those power shots, lead power shots.
I mean, it is impressive how he could be standing right in front of you and land three consecutive power shots in a row. It wasn't right. like you had to set up each one. No, it's like, all right, power shot to the head, power shot to the body, another power shot to the head. Now, I don't know what is it. I don't know if he lulls people in the early rounds and then they don't see that kind of explosiveness coming in the later rounds. But I think what's clear is that he has the kind of game-changing power that, number one, he can connect and hurt you really hard despite being smaller. And number two, a lot of people just can't really deal with that power, because you can make a case that Hector Luis Garcia is a better overall boxer because he does have boxing skills, but he doesn't have the explosiveness and the power that Gervonta Davis had. You can see it in the exchanges. Gervonta Davis, his power, just his punches just have a bigger thud. Now, I think I gave two, maybe three rounds to Hector Luis Garcia throughout the whole fight, maybe yeah. two. But the reason I couldn't give any more, or the reason I couldn't give maybe that second round instead of and just give him just one, was because he may have been boxing really well, but two or three of Tank's power shots kind of just won the round for him because they were so much more effective and they were much more impactful.
Yeah, most definitely. And now kind of moving along, you know, after this big win, stoppage victory, you know, some people are still going to say, oh, well, he fought a 130-pound guy coming up. You know, Garcia was still bigger than him. You could see, you know, the size differential, and like most guys will be for Tank. You know, and he's still got power. I wouldn't mind seeing him campaign at 135 if he decides to move up. He's obviously still the champion at 130. So he has options in terms of what's next for him. But, you know, you will get the detractors that say, okay, well, Tank needs to fight someone else. Well, guess what? He's going to fight a guy named Ryan Garcia who isn't, you know, 126 or 130 pounder. So that's the fight that everyone's looking forward to. You know, the social media generation and, you know, the boxing diehards, everyone. Now, you know, during fight week, Garcia was saying, you know, I'm the real Garcia. I'm the Olympian. You know, he's a Dominican Olympian. I'm, you know, the world champion. I've had the bigger victories, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. Yes. But again, Ryan Garcia is this dynamic fighter, a talent that, you know, can develop into something. We'll see if he can kind of put those pieces together. But on paper, this one's super exciting. So I want to kick it to you first and just ask you, are you excited about April 15th? Because now that's the date that they're saying, you know, tax day is going to happen.
That's funny. That's funny.
Yeah. So someone's ass is going to get taxed, basically. That one writes itself, that tagline. So yeah. What do you think about that fight?
I'll be excited when both of them are across each other in the ring and the first bell rings. You know what I mean? Because with boxing, anything can happen. We mentioned with Davis, he has all these issues outside of the ring. With Ryan, he has had some issues as well. So we don't know. And, you know, there were different platforms. There were different promoters. There is some sort of agreement in principle, but, you know, they still have to get something done and sign something ahead of this fight on April 15th. So I won't be too excited until they're in the ring. However, it's an excellent matchup. It's great for boxing. And it's one where I think that Gervonta Davis is going to have a slight advantage in going into the fight. I think you got to give him his credit for being more active, what he's done in the ring. With Ryan Garcia, don't get me wrong, I'm a big fan of his. Aside from, you know, I've worked with him, known him for a long time, know his parents, really great people. I remember the whole thing with Eddie Reynoso and stuff like that, his relationship with him, how he grew. Now he's with Joe Goosen. But I think Gervonta Davis has been busier. We've seen him fight against top tier fighters across two or three weight classes. And, you know, I think he's going to have an advantage, I think, perhaps when it comes to strength. With Ryan Garcia, however, he's taller. He has a longer reach, and you can make the case that he's quicker than Gervonta Davis. You couldn't see that left hook that he landed Javier Fortuna with in his last fight. The only thing is, though, how focused is he going to be in his fight against Gervonta Davis? And also, how much is that time away from the ring going to affect him? You know, guys around his age from a previous generation, like Oscar De La Hoya, 1997, when he was about 23, 24, he fought five times. Gervonta Davis, I can't remember how many times he's fought within the past year, but it's a lot more than Ryan Garcia. And we all know it's a time-tested adage that being away from the ring and inactivity is poison for a fighter. And you can be sparring, you can be training, you can even be in weight, but can you replicate all the things that happen in a fight, the fight week experience, actually cutting the weight, being in the ring, being seen by many fans, both on TV and in an arena. Will he be able to replicate that and make sure that he's 100% prepared? Now, on the other side, is the fact that he hasn't had a lot of wear and tear in his career. So maybe that does help him in the long run. But I think the conventional wisdom would state that Gervonta Davis has a better resume. He does have a lot of disadvantages in terms of reach and height, but the activity and what he's able to do will make him a favorite in this fight.
Yeah, I agree that on paper going in, Tank has got to be the betting favorite. You know, he's got to have the upper nod, you know, upper hand just a little bit, just because of what he's done, who he's fought, the experience. But it's going to be exciting in and around those exchanges when we're looking at speed versus speed, power versus power, how those exchanges are going to, you know, turn out. Now, I think one of the main things that are in favor of Ryan Garcia is his physical attributes, you know, his height, his reach. But my thing is, and, you know, when in talking about it with different media people this week, you know, we always go back to like, okay, well, what are the attributes that you would say, okay, that's going to be the difference. One of the things is Ryan's length and the jab. And anyone that would say that to me, I would say, when have we really seen him, you know, use an effective jab? He should be able to. Yeah. But maybe just because he hasn't had to, but I think that's going to be a really big key against Gervonta Davis. And we're talking about, you know, maintaining distance, jabbing, similar to the stuff that Rolly was doing. And, you know, there were maybe lulls where he fell asleep or wanted to land that big power shot. I don't think Ryan should necessarily fall into those traps where, you know, he has to exchange or anything like that. Obviously, he has fast hands, but I mean, you could potentially make this really easy if you're on your stick and maintaining distance and, you know, keeping Tank honest, obviously, when he comes in and landing that right.
And the ring IQ is something I forgot to mention. Yeah. I think Gervonta Davis has a higher ring IQ based on what we've seen in the ring against Pitbull Cruz. We saw him box in the outside, even with Roldis as well. We saw him box on the outside and implement a long-term game plan. We've also seen him come forward. That's what he came to be known for at the beginning of his career, and that's what he did last night, coming forward. So we've seen him be able to do two things. With Ryan Garcia, we've seen him come forward, but kind of at a distance against people mm-hmm. who are shorter than him, which will help him against Gervonta Davis. But we haven't seen him come forward against someone taller or implement that kind of long-term game plan of working the body, because we saw that against Emmanuel Togo. A guy who was kind of on survival mode, but also gave him problems because he was moving around a lot. What if Gervonta Davis decides to spend six rounds just boxing him from the outside? It'll be difficult because he's a shorter guy, but is it beyond the realm of possibility? Perhaps not, because of his boxing skills. So that's one thing that I think favors Gervonta. We've seen him both go forward and go backward and implement a long-term game plan. Whereas with Ryan, we've kind of seen him just use his reach and size and not really implement some sort of long-term strategy where he's working the body and trying to wear his opponent down.
Yeah, I think that's when it's going to get interesting. Again, those middle rounds, six, seven, eight, when we're like, okay, we've seen both guys. They know each other now in the ring for these first few rounds. Who can now take it to level two? You know what I mean? And I think Tank, again, has shown time and time again that he's able to do that. He's whatever you want to call it, he's willing to give up rounds. He's willing to take his time and download that data and then hiring IQ, implement those things. And I just think if Ryan is even, he's going to have to be on his, you know, A game the whole fight. It's not one of these things where it's like, oh, okay, my natural talent is able to let me coast through this fight. It's not going to be one of those fights. You got to be your best on all platforms and cylinders.
Right. And lastly, who's going to make mistakes in the mm-hmm. fight against Tank versus Ryan Garcia? Who's going to make mistakes? Leo Santa Cruz made the mistake of throwing three consecutive right hands. He landed the first two and said, all right, I'm going to land this third one, and got caught mm-hmm. with the uppercut and the fight was over. Rolando Romero landed a kind of wide right hook to the body. Felt like he landed it, tried it again, got knocked out. So I think one thing he needs to keep in mind is that you can't throw the same punch more than one time against Gervonta Davis. Even if you land it, don't get greedy and try to land it again, because he will capitalize it. And I think it's going to be an important fight where the guy who makes the biggest mistake first could pay a high cost.
100%. Yeah. And just going back on something you touched on, and I know you're a big guy of activity. So I think the fact that he didn't take a stay busy fight may come back to bite him in the butt, because I'd like to see him develop more with Joe Goose and develop that jab, really start to put these different attributes together, because, you know, the Cobra bag stuff is not going to happen. We saw it last night with Rashidi Ellis. I mean, I saw it during the week. this man is super fast, like precise with his punches, but that doesn't always translate to what you're doing in the ring against another fighter, a guy that's going to, you know, have power, sometimes maybe walk you down, and you have to put, you know, different game plan parts together on what you've been working on in the gym. And so, you know, it's not just, yeah, I'm super fast and I can throw, you know, six jabs in a row. Well, you know, can you put that together and make it meaningful for you in a fight? That remains to be seen, especially against a high level guy. I mean, you know, Tank Davis being one of these guys, super high boxing IQ, I think, and he's shown time and time again that, you know, he should be the favorite in this fight. But having said all that, I can't wait. I mean, if it does happen, yeah, like you said, I'm going to wait and temper my excitement until it's actually, you know, them standing across each other, like you said, on fight night. But yeah, I can't wait for this one. He said he's going to take a, you know, a week break and then be right back in the gym. Because again, that'll be a full camp. He's going to be ready to go if everything gets settled outside of the ring and all the legal stuff gets pushed aside. But, you know, everyone is going to have a stake. Everyone's going to have a say in this one. I mean, already Jake Paul, you know, talking shit last night on social media. They're already, you know, hyping themselves up. Tank's got his side of people. I mean, this is going to be just from like a social perspective, pop culture, like,
oh yeah.
I can't think of a bigger fight in that type of realm, you know, not just boxing, but just like the fanfare and, you know, celebrity and all that stuff. And you're really bringing two of the big entities of boxing together, DAZN, PBC, Golden Boy. You know, this is just going to be huge on so many different levels.
And lastly, don't rule out Ryan Garcia.
Right.
You know what I mean? He's been saying that he's going to shock the world this whole time. I've always believed in him. Who knows? What if he lands a left hook in round three or four and it's over? I mean,
yeah,
it's not.
Well, I'll give him credit too. I got to give him credit because, and Tank said it out of his own mouth last night. He's like, Ryan just said, yes, 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 yes. It's like, he wasn't even reading the contract. He's just like, yep, yep, yep. I'll do it. I'll do it. I'll do it. Let's do it. I give him credit for that because that shows he wants to fight. So for me, win, lose, or draw, he's the winner because he jumps ahead of half of these other guys that are talking shit each and every day on social media. And at the end of the day, they don't want to fight and they'll, you know, put up any excuse. These guys are, if they actually get into the ring, they're taking it back to, you know, we're always talking about the Four Horsemen, the 80s, Duran, Leonard, Hagler, Hearns, all these guys, whatever. They're taking it back to those days and they're starting a trend.
And they're not waiting until they're 30. He's 24, right? Ryan Garcia. He's doing it right now. So he deserves a lot of credit. And if he can beat Tank Davis, he can become the biggest star in boxing without a shadow of a doubt, because that's what he needs. That victory that says, I'm not a social media star. I'm a legitimate fighter. And I just beat a top talent.
Yeah. 100%. I think this one catapults both guys into a different stratosphere, you know, and maybe get some respect from, I think either guys are entrenched. Both guys are entrenched in their own kind of fan base, both popular sides, but just a different side. So maybe, you know, a lot comes out of, not just for the fighters, but a lot comes out for the fan bases when they're like, man, that guy put in work. You know, he didn't, whether he beats your guy or your guy beats him, when you see him fighting, like, yeah, he's pretty good. Like he should be, you know, number two, definitely, or, you know, whatever, he beat my guy, so he's number one. You start to get fans that now respect each man for whatever, you know, they've been able to do against, again, another high level guy. So this is the type of stuff we want to see. I mean, if it happens at the beginning of 2023, again, first quarter type stuff or beginning of second quarter, I mean, it is huge for boxing and it's something that, you know, we're going to relish also. I know we're going to do preview show, post fight show. It's just that magnitude, that big of a fight.
We need those big fights now and put it in our veins quickly, ASAP.
Definitely. Yeah. So let's transition real quickly after having spoken about Tank, the victory over Garcia, and then what's next against the other Garcia. Let's transition to another guy that fought last night, in Jaron Boots Ennis, a guy from Philly, a quick drive to DC. He had a lot of fans in the house when he came out. You would have thought that, you know, he was the headliner. I mean, that's how many people were cheering and kind of supporting him. Now, what we saw in the fight was a little bit more difficult and not something that we're accustomed to seeing from Boots. And when I say difficult, it was maybe just frustrating for him. And he kind of touched on this in the post-fight presser where he was like, I could have done a lot better. He said, not that I was chasing the knockout, but, you know, I was over anxious a little bit on offense. And you saw that. And I would say the one knock, and you kind of hear rumblings from people in and out of the gyms or whatever, he's in love with his offense. And you see that these different things that he's trying to do, he's switch hitting, he's, you know, swinging for the fences, not that he's not defensively sound, but he is really high on his offense, and he's trying to score, I would say, a knockout from the early going every single time. 9 times out of 10, he gets that done. And that's why people love him. He's all action. But when you start to get guys, you know, at another level, Karen being Kareem, I'm sorry, was it Kareem? Was his opponent?
I'm surprised nobody made jokes about him fighting a Karen. You know what I mean?
Yeah, well, that Karen didn't want to fight. But, you know, he did have very good lateral movement. Now, other than that, the judges didn't give him any credit because he didn't throw anything back. So it's 120-108 across the board, all three judges. And that's what I saw too. But it was frustrating in the sense that, you know, Boots is trying to figure out a guy that doesn't want to fight back. You got to cut off the ring maybe a little bit better. You can't swing for the fences every time. So I think he got 12 good rounds out of it at least, and hopefully has learned something. I think if you look at it, you know, in a positive light, he definitely had some learning experiences here. I know you were going to touch on that a little bit too. What were your thoughts on Boots Ennis's performance, and then now moving forward, when you start putting him kind of in that category or conversation with guys like Errol Spence and Terrence Crawford?
You won't find many people who will say negative things about Jerron Ennis. The consensus is that he's a top talent at 147 pounds with a bright future. He's the next generation, right? The guys like Crawford and Spence, those top guys at 147, he's of that next generation. However, one thing that he doesn't do that previous generation did at around his age is to be as active. And we saw that being an issue with other fighters as well. His last fight was on May 14th, 2022, and it ended in a second round knockout. Before that, he had fought in October. So it's been almost a year. And in those two fights where he fought in October of 2021 and May 14th of 2022, that first fight in October ended in a first round knockout. And I repeat that last fight ended in a second round knockout. So how much time do you actually get to work on your skills in a professional setting with the crowd, with the sweat, with the shirt, with the gloves? How many opportunities do you get to develop your skills when you're fighting guys and you knock them out in the first or second round, and then you don't fight for almost a year or 8 or 9 months? So I think that's one big factor that affected Jerron Ennis. And I think you mentioned in the post-fight interview, what did he say, that he was over-anxious? That over-anxiousness, that over-anxiousness will go away once you're in the round consistently. Once you're in the fight consistently, once you're fighting consistently, once you're in there, you know, taking punches on the gloves, moving your heads, being in there for long periods of time, you won't have that kind of anxiousness. That's why you see guys like Canelo or even Chocolatito. Chocolatito, he's so posed that, you know, when he's got a guy who's flashier moving around, he doesn't seem over anxious. He seems like a guy who's calm and poised. Same thing with Canelo. Canelo at 23 and 24 years old was really poised, was just really relaxed in the ring because he had spent so much time in Mexico and the United States fighting 8 and 10 round fights and not knocking everybody out and fighting 3 or 4 times a year. So I think that would be one recommendation, is to stay busier and, you know, to get some rounds in. And, you know, that's kind of, it's not a bad thing. It's more of, that's the downside of being so talented. It's not his fault he knocked these guys out in the first round, you know, but I think there could be some changes in his activity. Now, another thing that I heard, I can't remember who reported it or if it was an interview, but they said that Jerron Ennis' team did not study his opponent, whereas his opponent studied everything they could about Jerron Ennis. Now, he's a top talent, speed, quickness, everything. But once you get to a high level and you're fighting someone who can take your punches and who is really well skilled, then the game plan makes a difference. Then the fact that you watch tape makes a difference, because if he saw all this tape on you, he knows all of your tricks, and he's going to be able to take advantage of that when he sees it. And when he's taking advantage of all the tricks you've already done in the ring, what are you going to do? You know what I mean? So I think that's one thing that he needs to start doing, is to start looking at tape of his opponents, studying them so that he looks a lot better in the ring.
Yeah, and as we get more rounds and more tape on Boots, opposing trainers, and as you get, you know, to fight higher opposition, you know, what was told to me too from high-level guys, trainers and whatnot, is, you know, those people studying you, they're going to take, you know, those little things, the little things that they see that they can capitalize on, and they're going to try to, you know, work their game plan around that more and more and more. And so they're going to try to expose those little things. Yeah, there may be only a few things that he does maybe inconsistently or doesn't do super well, but those things are going to be, for lack of a better word, exposed as you go on. And, you know, unless you tighten those things up and unless you continue to work, and that may be defensively, offensively, you know, whatever it is, then you're going to have problems against a better crop. And again, a guy like his opponent last night, very good lateral movement. Eventually you're going to get a guy maybe that has really good lateral movement, but also sits down on his punches and throws more. Then we have a different fight, because, you know, Boots was so over anxious that at times I think he did get hit with punches, and it's just, you know, not that he
unnecessary got punches.
Like exactly. Unnecessarily, because he's so, you know, invested in his offense and trying to make something happen, you know, that wows the crowd.
There were flashy hooks where he'd end up with his back to his opponent because he was kind of
off. He got spun around just on his own accord more than once. Yeah.
You don't need to do that when you're so talented. You got to look at guys like Shakur Stevenson and even a Floyd Mayweather, all the speed in the world, but they have their feet under them. You know what I mean? They're not trying to be as flat or more flashy than they need to be. They use their talent, but in a controlled way.
Definitely. Yeah. I mean, I think Boots is one of the best talents in boxing. I want to see him again. I mean, he said again at the end of the night that he'll fight anybody, you know, even Virgil Ortiz, who now needs a dance partner. Obviously, that's not going to happen next. But, you know, these are guys that, again, sooner rather than later, need to fight in their prime. So it was exciting to see Boots. It's good to see him get rounds. And, you know, I just don't know that a fight, even if it's mandatory or not, against Errol Spence happens. You know, he's mentioning Bud, Spence, whoever it is. Get him in there against someone high level. Let's see him continue to develop and continue to fight, because, you know, he's willing to do this. He said last night, I'm going to be undisputed in three or four different weight classes. And I'm like, whoa, like,
yeah, that's
kind of, yeah, that desire.
But I think that it's January. He could fight three more times this year. No problem. Yeah. And very important for him to stay busy. And, you know, lastly, it's not that we're seeing anything negative. It's that we hold him in such a high regard that any deviation from what we think of him is like, we might be a little bit harsh, because it's like, we know you can do a lot better than this.
Right. Yeah. And I think he said it himself. You know, he was like, I wasn't a perfect night. But again, it's hard when you have a guy that's really not willing to engage, but you're going to get those guys. And again, sometimes you're going to get those guys with pretty good athleticism and lateral movement that can actually throw a little bit more and maybe win a couple rounds, because, you know, he didn't last night. But, you know, there are things that Boots can tighten up. And I think he was, you know, critical of himself in that sense as well. But all in all, a good victory. I mean, a win is a win. Didn't get cut or injured or anything like that. So it's good, like you said, so he can put himself on the schedule to fight maybe two, three more times in 2023. So it'll be exciting to see who they get him in there with, who's willing to fight him, because he said that as well. You know, maybe some of these guys see this fight and now they feel comfortable, like, yeah, I think I can get in there with Boots and make something happen.
Put him in there with David Avanesian. And I know he just lost to Terrence Crawford, but if he's good enough for Crawford, fight against Jerron Ennis.
Or a guy that fought before, Villa, who beat Rashidi Ellis, because all week.
Oh, that's a good fight. Oh, yeah.
All you heard was Rashidi Ellis, his speed versus Boots Ennis and this and that. They sat him next to each other at the presser. That fight now is, you know, not going to be talked about or on the table. Obviously, there's a potential rematch with both guys said they want Ellis and Villa. But, you know, if that doesn't happen, give me Villa against one of these guys. Yeah, I mean, he's just a monster coming forward, willing to take three to land one. And we know also that the shelf life on those guys is really short. So, you know, if he's going to fight that style, let's see him fight against one of these higher level guys like a Boots.
Kavaliescus would be good. Mean Machine. Good test.
Mm-hmm. Mean Machine. Yeah.
Yeah. A lot of guys.
Yeah. And then we start to get, you know, maybe some comparisons of, you know, okay, what did Virgil do?
Exactly.
Mean Machine. What did Boots do? You know, what did Bud do? Et cetera, et cetera. So that is a good fight. I wouldn't mind seeing that one.
Thank you for listening to the RBR Recap. Make sure to follow us on social media at RBR Recap and visit RBRRecap.com for the latest episodes.